All right, welcome back everybody to the CTB show, episode 5 of season 2 after week 4 in the NFL. I'm Thomas Pokornik, as always, joined by Christian Carnacci. Cat, what's going on?
Pretty cold this morning, man. It was it's that time of the year, fall, for those of you that live in Canada or Toronto, wherever where we are, but it's the fall season could get quite chilly, right, in the morning. It's like we experience all four seasons in one day in fall here. It's winter in the morning. It's sort of summer mid-afternoon. Evening comes around. It's actually fall, and then night's winter again. It gets pretty, pretty cold. There was frost on my car this morning, and that's not a good thing as we flip the page and turn into October. But I'm doing well. Pox got his Toronto Blue Jays merch on. I got my Toronto Blue Jays hat on, as always. Jays just clinched first home field advantage on that wild card game. I know it's not a football, it's not a baseball show, but we can always celebrate our Toronto Blue Jays having some success. But another team that's sort of not having the same success as our Toronto Blue Jays, and they showed it last night in some quite embarrassing fashion. I will jump right into it, and that's the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, it was kind of very, very reminiscent of what we watched last year with the Rams. Primetime, 49ers, get absolutely mopped.
Yeah.
It was bad, and it was kind of one of those, like, oh, you know, you could sort of see this coming just because the trends. Jimmy G is now 7-0 against the Rams in the regular season as a starter. Shanahan has historically owned McVay.
Yeah.
Yeah, 7 straight. So the Rams seem to have sort of the blueprint, or sorry, the 49ers sort of seem to have the blueprint on how to beat the Rams. But I don't know. Last night just sort of felt a little bit different than it has in games before. Yeah. And I know last year they got dominated, and I know that was concerning, and the Rams went on to win the Super Bowl. Not completely writing them off, but I think there are some very, very real problems with this Los Angeles Rams team. The offensive line is just completely non-existent. Matthew Stafford's been sacked 16 times this year. That's second most in the NFL. Only Carson Wentz has been sacked more. That's a huge issue. And the fact that they just have nobody to stretch the field. Their offense is completely reliant on Cooper Kupp. And I mean, I own him in fantasy, so I'm not going to complain too much.
I don't think you can complain.
But it's so, so obvious what they're going to try to do. How many times did Stafford just force a ball into such a tight window? Many times it worked. Kupp had 11 catches last night. But it's just going forward, for such a brilliant mind in Sean McVay, they need to figure something out on the offensive side of the ball because they can't run it either. And everything is within 15 yards. As a defense, very, very easy to defend. Those safeties are cheating. And you can just crowd sort of the middle of the field where you know Stafford's going to be looking for Cooper Kupp. And everyone else isn't really doing that much.
Yeah, I saw a stat on the broadcast last night. I believe it was the first time the Rams failed to complete a play over 20 yards in the McVay era, or it was last 4 or 5 years, something like that. But still, like, that just shows you how bland this offense was last night. And it's to completely blow it off and say, like, oh, it's the Rams, they're going to bounce back. I feel like that's a little bit negligent. Like, you're like, there's clear problems, like you mentioned. The offensive line is, it's not looking as right there. They're clearly missing Whitworth's presence and his veteran leadership in that locker room. It's clear. Odell Beckham was probably a big loss. Like, we saw them bring in Allen Robinson, who a lot of people were very high on, including myself, and they just don't seem to be utilizing him properly. I feel like his sort of role in this offense is very confusing. It almost feels like they didn't really have a plan for him because, like, they're really not using him, right? It feels like the offense has just run through Higbee and Kupp.
Yeah.
Right? They don't really look anyone else's way. They can't run the ball like you mentioned. But the one thing that stands out to me with this Rams team is they've been outscored 44-3 in the fourth quarter this year. Like, sure, say what you want. Last year the Rams struggled on prime time and some games, but they still were able to fight it out and win. This Rams team is not doing that this year. Like, that's a very big margin here. Like, 44-3, you're not going to be able to win games if you're getting outscored in the fourth quarter 44-3, right? And not only are you going to win game, not just going to win, not win games, you're going to struggle to, if that doesn't fix, you're going to struggle later on in the season, right? When the dog days come. And I'm not going to go around and say here that the Rams are not going to make the playoffs, but they're surely making the job a little bit more difficult than it has to be, right? And sure, you want to point fingers at McVay for the play calling. You want to point fingers at the defense. You want to point fingers at Matthew Stafford. I think everyone sort of deserves their own criticism in their own respectful way. But to just turn a blind eye to sort of the problems that's going on with the Rams right now, I'm just not able to do it.
Yeah, like, I guess if you sort of look on the positive side, when the Rams schedule came out, and people do this every year, they go down, okay, you know, this is a win, this is a loss, this is a win. Everyone does that at the beginning of the year. Through 4 weeks, it's very, very likely that most, even Rams fans, expected their team to go 2-2.
2-2.
I think it's just what they've shown in those two losses. And even, I mean, last week against the Cardinals was sort of convincing throughout. They were in control. But they did take their foot off the gas towards the end of the game, as you alluded to. Those three fourth quarter points, it's unacceptable. But even that win against the Falcons, completely let that game get out of control, and they ended up winning in the end, but it wasn't pretty. So they have not looked like these Super Bowl champions that were so, so impressive down the stretch last year. But they also won the Super Bowl in a year where there was so much parity. And I don't necessarily think the expectation was for them to come in, run it back, and just stomp over everyone in the league, because they just weren't that team last year either. And there's so, so many sort of good to great teams in the NFL, and I think they're now in that category. But I would be concerned, because especially the offensive line, there are some really, really good, you know, front sevens in this league. And when you have an offensive line of this caliber, to me, you're already walking into an uphill battle, because it's going to be hard for your offense to generate anything.
Yeah. And especially in an offense that's so play action dependent, like, you're going to need that time for those deep crossing routes and those deep routes that the Rams like to exploit. You need time for those routes to develop, right? And if your offensive line's not holding up for that extra second or two, it's going to be very tough for you to get the chains moving and to put up points. And like Pac just mentioned, and like I mentioned before, the 3 points in the fourth quarter are indicating that, right? When it's time for the offensive line to sort of lock down, when it's time for Matthew Stafford to lock down, they're just not on the same page. They're not getting the job done. And it's concerning to me. I'm not going to over panic, because they are still just 2-2, but they were a collapse away from, right, 1-3. There could have been some different outcomes, I know, the other way as well, but I'm going to be keeping a close eye on those Rams going forward, and especially in these next sort of couple of weeks, because I think now you're going to start to see what they're all about. How do they bounce back? Like, good teams, how do you bounce back from adversity, right? Like, we looked at the Bucs just a few years ago when they were 7-5 coming off that Monday night loss against the Giants, and they ended up running the table and going all the way to win the Super Bowl, right? So this is sort of the time where, I know it's crazy to say because we just finished fourth week, but great teams are going to start to emerge, right? And every team goes through their ups and downs. It's a long season, but the most telltale, when I see a team and I go, okay, that's a great team, it's how do they bounce back from adversity. And another team that we could segment right into it, because it's a perfect way to do it, is another team that's dealing with some serious adversity that's close to home to you, is those Dolphins, right? And obviously the adversity that they're dealing with is a little bit different than that of the Rams. They're dealing with a pretty serious injury that was suffered to Tua on Thursday night. Very scary injury, we should say. But the Dolphins, which a lot of people are high on, obviously Pac, myself as well, this is going to be a telltale sort of moment for their season with however long Tua is going to be out for, right? It was, like we just mentioned, we're going to talk about that sort of now, but how do they bounce back? How are they able to rally with Teddy Bridgewater? And are they able to overcome, as a locker room, are they able to overcome the loss of their leader?
Yeah, as a Dolphins fan, it was the first 3 weeks of the NFL season, honestly, couldn't have gone better. And it went from so good, everything was sunshine and rainbows, to things probably couldn't be any worse. And when Tua was down and it was so scary when his fingers locked and he was unconscious, to me, nothing else mattered. Like, I didn't care if we won the game 50-14. I didn't care if we lost 50-14. I just wanted to make sure that he was okay and everything's fine. And not even, like, worrying about our season. Just him as a person, that he was okay. Because you never, ever want to see that in sports. All his tests have come back clear now. It sounds like he's doing well. Obviously, he's already been ruled out for this week's game against the Jets. We're going to have to make do with Teddy. We gave a backup quarterback a lot of money for a reason. At the time, we didn't know how Tua was going to do as a starter. It's an investment that you never really want to see pay off because you obviously want your starter always on the field. But we're going to have to make do for, who knows, 1 week, 2 weeks, maybe a month with Teddy Bridgewater. But I want to talk about the actual concussion protocol and all the attention that's been on Miami and the NFL, because obviously this didn't just happen in Cincinnati. It dates back to the Buffalo game when I was there and Tua fell on his head and he got up and he was all wobbly, ended up getting, you know, everything seemed fine and it was just what they called a back injury. It was really alarming to see the Twitter reaction. All the social media doctors came out and immediately, you know, slamming Miami for what they did. And I just think, like, you don't know what went on.
Yeah.
And until until the findings of the investigation come out and we know what Miami did, what they didn't do, I don't think it was fair to comment at all. From what I've read, he was cleared Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday through concussion protocol to play in that game on Thursday against the Bengals. Sunday, he was cleared by a team doctor and an independent doctor. Now, that independent doctor has since been fired by the NFL in a move that I believe is just completely optics-related because they have yet to publish a report of malpractice against him. So it's a very, very weird time right now in terms of all this concussion and head injuries in the NFL. It seemed like 6 or 7 players were reported. I don't know, maybe I'm just noticing it now because of what happened, but my phone was buzzing like crazy on Sunday. It seemed like all these reporters made a special note each time to point out when a player was ruled out for a concussion last week.
Yeah, it did feel like that. It was sort of, it was because I remember I believe they got some new rule saying that if the player looks like incoherent for them to come back into the game, they must be ruled out or something like that. As a result of this Tua stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's a touchy subject, these sort of head injuries and like when you see someone like Tua go down like that, and anyone really, like, it's just very, it takes like a, it's you got to be strong to sort of watch it. Like, I wasn't able to watch the whole thing. Like, when I saw it, like, I had to sort of turn it away, and I didn't see it in real time. So I saw it in a video after, and it definitely made me a little woozy just because I'm not really into, like, I can't watch someone smash their head like that. It just, like, for some reason doesn't go well with me. But obviously it's good news that the Dolphins have, obviously he traveled back with the team. He was discharged pretty fast, and it looks like everyone's in good spirits. It looks like Tua's in good spirits. He posted a statement on his social medias, which is good to see. But going back to last Sunday, obviously people that are making comments on the fact that Tua was able to come back into the game know as little as everyone that's sort of defending him too, right? Like, nobody knows anything, right? So the only thing that you could sort of hold on to is the fact that he was cleared by 2 doctors to come back into that game, right? One, like you mentioned, has since been fired, which I will say it feels like a little bit of a scapegoat move, and Roger Goodell is pretty good at that, right? He's pretty good at delegating sort of, and even when they went to go fire him, they made sure they put unaffiliated doctor, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure he was hired somewhere by someone affiliated by the NFL. I guarantee it. They just have to sort of put in, it's a good PR move. The NFL is sort of good at that with sort of pushing off the blame. But I know nothing, Pac knows nothing, and the people that are sort of going against the Dolphins' move knows nothing. Like, the only thing we could possibly do with this sort of situation is wait until the investigation is done, right? Because it's all rumors and it's all talk. And until the investigation is done, and there's written in paper that this is what the Dolphins did, this is the protocols they did or did not break, then that's when people can sort of talk about it. Because it's sort of just all hypothetical speaking now. Like, people are using this time to bash the Dolphins organization because they had some lingering stuff. Like, I don't think it's fair. And, like, why would Mike McDaniel put his franchise quarterback, like, if he was not able to come back into the game, why would he put him in a position to further damage his brain and make his the future of his career in jeopardy, right? Like, it just does not make sense to me. I don't think someone would do that. I think it's just a cause of a crazy, crazy coincidence where two back-to-back injuries happened on the back-to-back weeks, and the extent of that injury caused people to go back and point fingers at what happened the game before. I think that's sort of my say what you want sort of theory, whatever you want to call it. I just find it hard to believe that a organization and head coach and team doctors would put their player in a position to further damage their NFL career and their future of a franchise over some sort of decision like that. Like, I feel like they'd have to be 100% confident.
Yeah, it was Emmanuel Acho who I believe shared a story of when he was playing in the NFL and he went into concussion protocol. He said they asked him two questions. What day is it today, and who's the president of the United States? And he said, obviously it's Sunday because I'm playing football. That's not hard for me to know. And the president I've known for 3 years. So I think that it's very plausible, and again, this is speculation, but more so educated speculation, that the Dolphins did indeed follow every single protocol with their quarterback on Sunday against the Bills. Yeah. It's just that the protocol needs a complete revamp. And of course, players, especially Tua, think about all the pressure that's been on him this year. Yep. He's in a big-time divisional game against the Bills. He goes down. His team needs him. Everyone's going to say, oh, he can't stay on the field if he doesn't come back in the game. A lot of pressure on him. Of course, he wants to stay on the field, course, and play, yes, through it, and, yes, and skirt the system, which seems like it's an easy workaround. So that is one thing that I've sort of thought about. But the fact that Mike McDaniel, who has been touted as this genuine guy that the players love, has consistently gone up on that podium in his press conferences and been emotional about it too, and say, like, I would never, ever put my quarterback in a situation like this. And they're adamant that it was a back injury. So, like we both said, it's a waiting game. We're going to have, absolutely, to see what comes out of this investigation. I already read that Tua is going to be interviewed this week a bunch. So we'll see what happens. But obviously, a scary sight for football fans, a tough look on the NFL in terms of head injuries as a whole, and a lot of outrage from the general public.
Yeah, and obviously it's a scary time for Tua himself, right, and to his family and his loved ones. Like, I couldn't imagine, like, watching that game in real time and that being, let's say, your son or, like, your brother or something. Like, in that split second where, like, mm-hmm, you see the his hands lock like that, like, you never want to see that with anyone, right? And at the end of the day, people talking is all whatever, right? Tua is a person at the end of the day, right? He's a human being just like everyone else. So we're wishing him the best, obviously. We're hoping he has a speedy recovery and he's able to come back stronger and lead this Miami team to the places that they had their eyes set on just last week, right? And I think those eyes are still set on that ultimate goal, and I think Tua will come back, and he'll come back stronger just because of his mental makeup and the way that he's built. This is not the first time he's dealt with a pretty serious injury like that, so I'm counting on Tua to bounce back in big fashion, and I think that he's sort of got all the eyes and a lot of cheers from just NFL fans in general, right? Hoping that he is able to make a full recovery and he's able to put that next foot forward and sort of put this in the past, right?
All right, let's move over to a bit more of a positive note. And, you know, we go from talking about my team to your team. And it's crazy that we're sitting here just 3 weeks ago. You were, and I'm going to make you eat your words a little bit here. Your quote was, the Cowboys are a bottom five team in the NFL without Dak Prescott. we're here today, and my Dolphins and your Cowboys have the same record of 3-1. The Cowboys have stepped up big time without their star quarterback, and Cooper Rush, 3-0 on the season, 4-0 as a starter on his career, first Cowboys quarterback in franchise history to win their first four games, which is pretty hard to believe with the success that the organization has had. Sort of, you know, how are you feeling right now? What's the mood around Cowboys?
You know what, man? Like, it still feels a little bit weird because, like, I'm watching the game and it just doesn't feel like, at least from an offensive standpoint. Maybe I said, yeah, we're a bottom five team, but we're still a bottom five offense in the league. Like, yeah, if you watch the game, you can see our offense is just, it's so boring and bland. But I mean, you can't really ask for much more. Like, you're watching a backup quarterback run an offense. It just, I'm comparing it to last year when we had the number one offense in the league, so it just feels a little bit different. But the thing that is really, really, really impressive to me is just the fact that, I know we said it last week and a weekend before, this defense has been phenomenal. Like, it's really, really stepped up big time. And it's, dare I say, carrying our team, really. Like, it's putting us in favorable positions for Cooper Rush to just make a few throws and get into field goal position. And we're stepping up at all sort of phases that a team would need to step up on when their star quarterback is out, right? Like, the receivers are making plays. We're running the ball very well. The offensive line is playing solid. The defense is, as a whole, is just playing as one dominant unit. Micah Parsons, again, just ridiculous. He was lining up at corner a couple times. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a linebacker slash edge rusher slash corner. I've never seen someone do that before. And Trayvon Diggs has just had a remarkable start to his 2022 campaign, building off that other 2021 breakout campaign. But yeah, man, 3-1. 3-1. I couldn't imagine it. I know I said here, I came here on week one and emotions were very, very low then, right? I had low expectations. That was also assuming that Dak would be out for about 8 to 10 weeks. I think that was the original thing, which, hey, look, I'm not sure if Dak's going to be 100% when he even comes back, let's say in this week or next weekend, but I think we have some cushion to play here with right now. Now that we're 3-1, obviously we have a tough Rams team that's coming off a big loss, but I'm not going to look too far. I'm going to live in the moment here. I really do think that the Cowboys are turning heads, and including myself, but I'm going to go and say one thing. I know, obviously, people want to talk about Cooper Rush. People want to talk about the defense. There's one person that I think deserves a little bit more credit, and I have been vocal about him. I've called him on this show. I called him one of the worst head coaches in the NFL. I said that multiple times, I think two or three times. But, hey, I think Mike McCarthy is really, really, really having a good, I don't want to say great, but he's having a very good season as the Cowboys head coach right now. He's now improved to 8-7 as a head coach without Dak Prescott, where if you compare it to our last coach, Jason Garrett, was 1-13 without Dak or Tony Romo in the lineup. So it just shows you how difficult it is to win with a backup quarterback, not just a backup quarterback. We're forgetting that Cooper Rush was out of the league in 2020, right?
He was out of the league in 2022. The Cowboys started the year with one quarterback on their roster.
Yes, technically it was a practice squad, yeah. Right? But we're talking about a quarterback that was once out of the league for a full year, right? And the fact that the Cowboys are able to, and Mike McCarthy in general, is able to coach a team to a three consecutive wins with Cooper Rush as a backup quarterback, it's definitely, definitely cool to see. And I want to see how, like, an outsider, like, what do you think of the Cowboys as an outsider? Because it's so hard for me to get, like, a grasp on them, because, like, I'm obviously, my opinion around them is slightly biased just because they are my favorite team. Like, what do you genuinely think about the Cowboys?
My thoughts on the Cowboys, I'm beginning to see more and more why Dan Quinn used to be a head coach and why he had head coach attention on him last year. The defense is obviously the anchor of this football team. And yes, Micah Parsons has been so, so impressive. But to me, I think it's Trayvon Diggs that's been the best player on the Cowboys this year. And I know that's a huge claim because of how good Parsons is. And people have called him even the best player in the NFL. But Trayvon Diggs, he had a great season last year. And he had, I think it was 11 interceptions. Mm-hmm. And I know he already has two this year, but the first 2 weeks he had zero. The last two have sort of come on as of late. I think he's having a better season this year than he was last year. And I don't care if he finishes the season with two interceptions. I'll still say that because he's locking down number one receivers right now. He leads the league in pass breakups. His passer rating allowed when targeted is in the 40s. So he's just so impressive. And when you have him, it just makes everyone around you better because he can shadow a top receiver in the NFL. Offensively, obviously you're playing with your backup quarterback. You have your limitations. I still have my concerns personally as a whole on Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy, even though they've been impressive thus far. Overall, I think I'm excited to see them play when Dak comes back because obviously your ceiling offensively goes way up because I think you have an elite defense that can potentially, you know, help you guys compete in a very, very wide open NFC.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would like to see Kellen Moore, and from a play-calling perspective, I would really like to see him sort of call a similar offense to what they're calling with Cooper Rush here. Because I feel like the way the Cowboys think when they have Dak at quarterback, like they feel like they need him to play hero ball, right? Like when you're coaching and playing in the NFL, like. You want to sometimes go back to the basics, right? Like play action, some dump offs here and there. Like Dak, I find so often needs to go to his like fourth and fifth reads because of these play calls that get called. And it's just, it's tough. It's a lot to ask for a quarterback when you're expecting him to go through four or five reads before he's getting rid of the ball, right? Like we're looking at Cooper Rush. Obviously, the offense is severely dummied down just because of the fact that it is Cooper Rush at the end of the day. It's a backup run offense. And I saw a quote from Colin Cowherd yesterday, and it said, he said that he was using it as a knock on Dak. He said that the Cowboys are running this. He said, okay, Josh Allen, let's say Josh Allen gets hurt. Their backup is Case Keenum. Oh, yeah, so Case right. Keenum. You're going to run a different offense for Case Keenum than Josh Allen. He says the same thing about Lamar Jackson, his backup, which their offense was the same last year. But he goes on and lists a bunch of quarterbacks, Justin Herbert and his backup, whatever. You're going to tailor the offense. Then he goes and says that the Cowboys offense is the same offense that they're running with Dak and Cooper Rush. And that's just not true.
But what is that even like?
He was just using it to say like, oh, because Dak is not like a top quarterback, whatever, right? I just saw that, and there's a lot of people that believe that. Like, there's people, like, there's, like, this whole weird thing that's going on around with Cooper Rush and Dak. I don't know why it's gotten a little crazy now. Like, some takes are completely absurd. There's people, Cowboys fans included, there's people that want Cooper Rush to stay at quarterback and whatever, for whatever reason. But I just, it's crazy, and I feel like there's a lot of talk just because, obviously, it is the Cowboys at the end of the day, right? But it's like you'd be lying to yourself if you would say like, oh, this team is better with Cooper Rush than it is with Dak. Like last year the Cowboys had the number one offense. And I think that's why people have so much intrigue to go back to what you were saying, the point that I was trying to make from the beginning, is now that this Cowboys defensive unit like really has potential to be one of, if not the best unit in the NFL. So if you can complement a number one defense, obviously I'm not saying that the Cowboys are going to come back with Dak and he's obviously going to make the Cowboys the number one offense again. Even if the Cowboys are able to replicate, let's say, a top 10 offense rest of the season with Dak, I think I sort of like their chances to even just have a chance at doing something come January with a top 10 offense that's complemented with a number one or top three defensive unit. Because at the end of the day, they're number one in scoring defense. Number one, right? They have yet to give up a over 20 points in a game, and say what you want about the opponents, but the fact of the matter is this unit has been dominant, and I would love to see how they're able to sort of complement each other with the offense that's Dak led come, let's say, week six, right?
Yeah, and I think like this division to me is, it's not over yet. No. And I'll make this comparison, and I don't want to make this comparison and people think that I don't think the Eagles are a good team. I think the Eagles are a very, very good team. This comparison is more so just portraying how early it is in the regular season. Last year, the Arizona Cardinals started, what, 7-0?
7-0. 7-1 they were.
7-1?
Yeah.
Their season didn't end on a very good note. People are forgetting how long of a season it is. The Eagles look phenomenal right now. If you're going to tell me they're the best team in the NFL, rightfully so, because they look that good. But you need to keep this going through each year. The Cowboys are only one game behind the Eagles right now, and that could change very, very fast, especially when you get a healthy Dak Prescott yet. So I'm not writing off the Cowboys. I'm not saying any division is finalized because we're just now getting into October.
But yeah, like you'd be like just blowing it off for no reason, knowing that the wind's just gonna bring it right back to you, right?
Yeah.
If you're just sort of saying that any season sort of written off just because of the fact that we're only through 4 weeks, right? Like it's only been four games. We still have 13 more games to go. So the season's long, but I want to touch on in the next segment. We're going to talk about a little bit of the AFC North. Obviously, Kenny Pickett came in and finally has taken over Mitch Trubisky, which the Mitch Trubisky experiment sort of failed. I think it was sort of. I mean, there's a lot, right? Trubisky's sort of lacking confidence. You can just tell, and if the team is going to be bad, you might as well be bad with your rookie quarterback, right? Like, at least get him the reps. And I think that's sort of the situation that the Steelers realized, okay, our team is not good. We'll sort of move to Kenny Pickett because we're going to be in the same boat. But before we get to the Steelers, I want to talk about the rivals, Ravens. The second straight week that the Ravens have had a second half meltdown.
Right? Second straight home game.
Second straight home game, yeah. Sorry, yes. Because they played
the Patriots.
The Patriots.
And they won.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's concerning.
Very.
I love this Ravens team. I had them in my Super Bowl bubble. I still think that they're built for that, like I said. Still very early, but these are things that you need to tighten up on. Lamar looks phenomenal. I know the second half wasn't great against the Bills. The fourth quarter against Miami, I wouldn't even put too much of the blame on him just because he was, frankly, never on the field. These collapses can't happen for a playoff team, plain and simple. But what is most surprising, and I remember reading this on social media when Tua threw six touchdowns against the Ravens, people saying, oh, their defense is banged up, their secondary is banged. It's not. This is a secondary with Marcus Peters, Marlon Humphrey, rookie first-round pick Kyle Hamilton, who was graded as one of the most exciting safety prospects we've seen in years. They've paid big money for Marcus Williams in free agency, and you got Chuck Clark back healthy after he was hurt last year. To me, on paper, that's a secondary that should be making it very, very difficult week in and week out for a quarterback. And they have some guys up front in the front seven that can make plays. So I'm not really understanding why it's not working for the Ravens, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But these collapses cannot happen.
No. And like I've been a downer on the Ravens in previous years, but this year just feels different, right? Like I love the strides I've seen from Lamar. I think he's just become such a fantastic quarterback, and I'm so high on Harbaugh and their defense as a whole, but it's so hard for, like you literally just said, it's just so hard for me to grasp my head as to why their team is just not able to put it together right now. And obviously we're going to get people that say, oh, you're just overreacting. It's only been two games. No, like the reason why it may seem as an overreaction is because we were so high on these teams coming in. Like you don't see Super Bowl teams like collapsing like this. Like that's not what you got to know how to win, right? Like, and that's what made Brady so good, whereas he just always found a way, right? No matter what. Like, sure, things aren't going to go your way. It's a long season, and momentum's a real thing. A team gets two back-to-back scores, you're suddenly on the back, your back's against the wall, right? And even though you could be up by, let's say, 10 points still. But, like, I said it before the show, what makes teams great is how they're, one, able to bounce back from adversity, and two, their ability to close games out. And I think people don't realize that. Like, that's so, so important. Like, big teams in big moments got to close team games out. And am I confident that the Ravens will turn it around? I think so, right? I still believe in this Ravens team, and I think that their outlook is, like Pac said, a Super Bowl contending team come when it comes down to it. But this is stuff that they have to iron out soon, right? Like, sooner rather than later. Because, look, even the division as a whole, the Bengals are going to pick up pace. Steelers, say what you want, whatever. They'll probably finish last. But the Browns aren't that bad. Like, yeah, they're not bad. Games.
And they're going to get Deshaun Watson back eventually. So.
And when it comes down to it, they're going to be a pretty good team. And the conference is no joke. You got the Bills, you got the Dolphins, obviously. Like, there's teams littered. Chargers, Chiefs, Raiders, whatever, Broncos, whatever. I know we talked last week, but still. Like, the Ravens have to get this figured out sooner rather than later because it could come back to bite them if these problems continue to linger.
There's so many teams in that AFC that are sitting at 2-2, and you really hope you don't sit in week 17 and say, man, I wish we didn't blow that 20-point lead against the Dolphins. Man, I wish we didn't blow that 17-point lead against the Bills. I think they'll turn it around. I think they'll be fine, and I do love them to bounce back, but you can't feel, you know, that great about what you've seen in the past 2 weeks. You could very well be 4-0 right now. And I know your first four games were against the AFC East, and that's a tough division in the NFL, but it's just like, man, they're right there for the taking. And you really, really hope that they can use these moments to learn from them. That way they find a better way to close out games. And you just don't want this to be a theme for the whole entire season. And it's traditionally not with a really, really good coach. With Harbaugh.
And a well-disciplined team. Like, they're a well-disciplined team.
But in those two losses, you can point to some very, very key mistakes, errors, decisions that led to them losing. Just sloppy against Miami. They fumbled the ball on the one-yard line. Yeah. You punched that in. You win the game.
Yeah.
The game's out of reach. They went for some fourth downs late.
Last week.
They've been very, very aggressive in both of those losses, and that's how Harbaugh is going to be. He trusts his guys.
Yes.
And they just haven't come up in those key fourth down moments. So maybe down the stretch, they turn it around. By no means are either of us ready to sell stock.
No. I might be buying a little bit more.
Yeah, we think
low.
They're a very, very good team. It's just that, like, the way they're losing, you don't like to see that from a team that should be a Super Bowl contender, right?
Obviously, when you're buying a stock, it's this, if the stock's at a low price, there's going to be some problems with the stock, or there's some negatives and some things that would scare people away, right? But I'm willing to sort of put those aside. I think the Ravens are going to be able to bounce back, but it's still some concern that's worth talking about right now, right?
Yep. All right, quickly, we'll head back to the rivals. A little bit about Kenny Pickett. Stat of the week, Kenny Pickett, he has yet to throw an incompletion in the NFL. He has 10 completions and 3 interceptions. I don't know how much of the game you watched. That's a stat line where you just got a feel for especially a rookie in their debut, because those three interceptions were ridiculous.
Yeah, well,
maybe one of them could have been.
Yes.
I think that was the one to the Fryer move.
Yeah.
The Claypool one, you're throwing a 50-50 ball.
To a 6-5.
Yeah, that's a veteran move to me. And that's
and that
a
was
move
his first
where it's
play
like,
the back. That was first pass of his
first
career.
First pass. And if I'm a Steelers fan and I see that, I'm saying, okay, we made the right decision, because Mitch Trubisky wasn't making those aggressive plays like that. Overall, I think you have to be optimistic if you're a Steelers fan. You have some nice young players on defense. And then on offense, you got Kenny Pickett, who will see how he does with, I would say, maybe not the best core to work with. The O-line is not great in Pittsburgh. The wide receiving core is something that I kind of thought would be doing a little bit better, but maybe that's just been the product of the Matt Canada offense and Mitch Trubisky. But we'll see. It's honestly, you know, you're 1-3. It's uncharted territory for a Mike Tomlin-led team, but let's see what this kid has.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect. Like, they realize that they'd be in the same boat with Kenny Pickett and Mitch Trubisky, so they might as well just roll with Kenny Pickett, right? But I liked what I saw with Kenny Pickett. I obviously had to rewatch the game after because I had an engagement party, but I went back and watched. I didn't see any problem with giving Chase Claypool that sort of, and it was the first play of his career. Like, that was the first pass of his career, right? And honestly, I think it was more an effort issue. Like, I didn't think Claypool gave it his all. I don't know if he was not used to getting balls like that, but I like what I saw with Kenny Pickett. I think he's sort of, this is the right move, right? I think in a quarterback strong class next year, you never know, right? I know it's such a short leash, but you sort of want to, as an organization, you want to deploy this guy and say, look, okay, let's see what we got. Because if we don't like what we got, then maybe we'll have a premium pick and we can go in a different direction. Because I think that's, the NFL has become such a, what have you done for me, as soon as possible sort of league. Like, we want to know, because if we're not it, we're going to switch it again, right? And I think that's sort of just what happens with the immense quarterback talent that's now in this league. But the person I'm most excited for is NFL young boy George Pickens. George Pickens, ready for everyone's ready for George Pickens to be a top five fantasy wide receiver the rest of the way? Oh, I got all George Pickens stock in my fantasy leagues because Kenny Pickett and George Pickens is going to be the greatest wide receiver quarterback duo in Pittsburgh Steelers history.
I think they'll make some plays. I don't know about that, but you know, the Steelers have a track record of some pretty bizarre wide receivers, and that's a little bit in reference to what Antonio Brown's been up to the past week. But we'll see. We'll see how Pickens does. I'm excited for Pickett. I said this going into the season because Steelers fans had unrealistic expectations of their team. I said, if Mike Tomlin had just one losing season in this in his career, you guys would be projected by everyone to win five games this year.
Yeah.
Everyone was holding on to this. Tomlin has never had a losing season, and everyone figured they'd win nine games, go 9-8.
Yeah.
Wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And I know I just spoke about how early it is in the season. I think it's late enough for me to see what the Steelers team is. They're 0-7 all time without TJ Watt, and he's going to miss some more time. So,
so that's going
to
probably
good luck to the Steelers.
Yeah. And that's followed up by a nice 14-point line that our friends down in Nevada set for them. But that record of 0-7 could go down to 0-8, 0-9, 0-10 pretty soon. But you know whose record is not 0-8 or 0-7? Who's the complete opposite? 4-0 in the hammer. Thomas Pocketnick, the sharpest better I've ever seen in my life.
So Tom. I'm 4-0 in the hammer. You'd think I'd be maybe placing these bets on my own. Come on, what am I doing
now? You're lost. So you're 0-4. You're 0-4.
No, I'm 4-0.
You're 4-0, but you're 0-4 in the clown show.
This week we're going in. It's time. Because you know what I like to do? I like to parlay.
Yeah, parlays are for suckers.
What am I thinking?
Parlays are for suckers. If you're out there and you parlay, no respect for
you. I got these two I'm hitting every week, and I put them in parlays. Yeah. And it's just...
Yeah. But we're here. The Hammer, brought to you by BetStamp. Check out the BetStamp app. Or check them out on the website, online, whatever, betstamp.app. Use the code CTB. It's a free app. You can come track your bets. You can track my bets. You can track pretty much anything. It shows you where the best odds are for any possible bet. Any possible bet. And you'd be surprised. I'm no genius when it comes to gambling, but like just some crazy... Like, I got Olave on Sunday that I threw in my lock series at plus 190. I'm like, how can I not take this? Like, who else is playing receiver for the Saints? And it ended up hitting. I saw CeeDee Lamb on the plus 145 or plus 155 over 5.5 receptions. Like, I'm like, okay, I saw it was -110 anywhere else, so I'm going to take it there too, right? It's a great app, and if you're really trying to get an advantage for the books, check out BetStamp, use code CTB. People only have to, I saw this too before we get into our picks. Even the best gamblers in the world are profitable on 57% of picks.
Yeah.
Right?
It's
hard. That just shows you why parlaying, sure, you see those big payouts, but it's not always the most profitable solution because you could go, let's say, 4-for-6 in a parlay, and if you just took them all straight, you'd be making money, but instead, you're lost, right?
Hard to beat Vegas. Before we get into our picks, you gave me some credit for being 4-0. You're 3-1 also. Not too shabby on the record so far. But I got to give some credit to you as well because you're locks. We had a great week, and I think you texted me at some point on Sunday, and you were like, hey, you know, we're pretty good at this because you were 5-0 on your locks. My bold predictions this week, I predicted Austin Ekeler to get 3 touchdowns. If only I had bet on that, I'd be... Studio, we'd be in California right now doing the show live on the beach because that would have been a nice payday. We had a good week. We're on a heater right now. 7-1 combined on the hammer from the two of us. So tune into this segment. Make sure you turn up the volume and listen to these picks. You got first pick this week. Who is getting hammered?
It's an honor. It's an honor here. I am going Titans -2.5 against the Commanders at points bet. It's the best line on the market right now at -110. The Titans are coming off 2 straight wins while the Commanders are just struggling. They lost to Cooper Rush. I think Tannehill and Derrick Henry are just going to run the ball all day long on those Washington Commanders. I actually think the Titans are going to win by a touchdown. So I'm willing to take the 2.5 line here at points bet for -110 with some confidence here. I'm looking to improve to 5-1 this week so I can catch Pock, maybe eventually hope he slips up. But I don't think this pick slip it up. Titans minus 2.5 at points bet.
That's a good one. Some nice value there. This pick that I'm going to make with my first selection, this one is all about really what the BetStamp app does. The Chargers are minus 3 pretty much on every single book you can find. BetStamp app shows you they're minus 1.5 on ProLine Plus, whole point and a half. That is key. I know they're on the road. I know the Chargers have tended to play in some close games, maybe sometimes play down to their competition, but against the Browns that just came off a loss against the Falcons, they're a team that can be had. I like the Chargers. You got to keep pace with the Chiefs. You got to win this game, especially the Browns are also 2-2 in the AFC. So this could be a potential wild card tiebreaker soon. Big, big game. The whole, you're literally getting this spread cut in half for you with the BetStamp app. So I got to take them. Give me the Chargers minus 1.5 on ProLine Plus.
And that's perfect because my next pick is also just showing what the BetStamp app is about as well. I'm going with the Texans plus 8.5. I'm on the road against the rival Jaguars. And this is more, look, I don't love the pick. Like, I don't love the Texans against the Jaguars, but I do love the value here, right? The Texans are pretty much are 7.5, plus 7.5 underdogs at pretty much every other book. And for the same line, ProLine Plus is offering plus 8.5, right? That same minus 120 line. I'm still expecting the Jags to win, with that being said, but you got to take your chances here. It's a divisional matchup. I think that the Texans are able to keep it close. They only have to cover 8.5 points. I think that's sort of a given. I don't think the Jaguars are a super elite team that where they could blow away their rivals. At the end of the day, it's still a divisional game, and those games tend to be pretty close. So I'm going to take my chances here with the Texans, and this is just a strictly value play here, and I wouldn't have done this if I was gambling last year and I like this Texans game. I would be a rookie and I would take plus 7.5. So don't be a rookie. Download the BetStamp app and find the best line.
Last but not least, I was all over Sunday Night Football and the Chiefs last year. Last week I called it a revenge game. This is also a bit of a revenge game because the Ravens are playing the Bengals at home this week on Sunday Night Football. They were swept against them last year. They also got the last two home games on their mind, blowing those leads. They got to give their fans a treat here and pick up a win. They're 3-point favorites. Honestly, I wasn't all that impressed with the Bengals either last Thursday. I know they have a long week now, but give me the Ravens. Give me them to cover. You can find them minus 3 again. Oh, no, this is on points bet at minus 110. Great value. I don't know. I like Lamar in this spot. I can't see them dropping 3 straight to the Bengals, especially at home.
Yeah. That was a pick where I had on my radar as well. But I ended up going with the other two. Look, when you're looking at odds and you're just line shopping on BetStamp, like I feel like a lot more games look more enticing just because you see the value there. And it's more about the value that you're finding in the line as opposed to the game itself, which is what I've found. And I've had a pretty successful run now on the BetStamp app. But yeah, that concludes the hammer. We don't have the hammer here today. I don't know where it is. I think Puck lost it because he was going 4-0 and he's probably smashing things with it.
It's taken away from me.
In excitement. So I don't have it here. Let's hope I can maybe have a 2-0 week. Puck goes to 1-1, so we can be all tied up as we head into week 6, where I can hammer my Cowboys against the Eagles. That's my pick, no matter what line it is. I'm gonna take it. So maybe that's not the best value pick here, but it's just me just being a homer. Maybe I'll have 3 picks that week. Maybe we'll do that. But
do 1 week. Maybe Thanksgiving. I mean, next week's Canadian Thanksgiving, but maybe we got to do like an American Thanksgiving special. Got to pick 4 games or something like that.
Yeah, you know what?
Add some wild cards in here.
You just reminded me how crappy our Thanksgiving is compared to American.
You don't think it's good?
Oh,
I don't know. I like the weather when it's like where we live in Toronto. Yes. By the time American Thanksgiving,
it's freezing cold. It's like winter.
Yeah, but so like it's nice that it's fall and it's still nice outside when we have.
I just like the whole tradition behind American Thanksgiving. Like it's just way better than ours. I mean, I agree. I could get some turkey in my stomach and fall asleep on the couch for 4 or 5 hours, but it is what it is. But hey, we're going to be some profitable sports bettors this week thanks to the BetStamp app. Like we just said, if you don't have the BetStamp app, check it out. You could tail us. You could find value. You could do anything. It's so important to line shop. Download the BetStamp app or check them out online and use the code CTB. It's completely free. You would regret not downloading it. If you're into gambling, if you're into sports betting and just sports analytics in general, check out the app. Use code CTB. And yeah, that's another.
Remember, guys, no parlays, too. No parlays.
Yeah, no parlays. No parlays. That's Kat's golden rule. If you,
it's my rookie mistake.
Yeah, I got to teach Pac here. He's got some years younger than me, but yeah. I got to teach him how to be wise in the sports betting game. The books want you to take the parlays because the sucker sees the big payout and they go, oh, you know what? I'm gonna hit this. But then you end up going 4 for 5 or 4 for 6 and you're like, ah, if I just took every game straight, I would be profitable, right? I'd be making money here. Instead, you're down. You know what, Puck? You might have to get some time out there, right?
We'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyways, guys, thanks for tuning in once again. We appreciate all the support as of late and we'll see you next week.
All right, guys, take care.